All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy. We'd love you to support this show. Please like, follow, and subscribe to us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Your likes and subscription helps us to grow and attract interviews and content. So please retweet and share our posts. Your contributions are appreciated. All right, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. We are live. Thank you for joining us. I've got Daniel Weese dialing in. And from the all-conquering mighty Canada, Marcus Almighty.
Greetings.
And from the defeated, humbled America, voice of reason.
What the?
69 Blizzard. Sorry, it's a hockey reference. I had no idea that there was a hockey game, by the way.
There's
people hockey. Going at each other on Facebook. I was like, what the hell?
I'm sure you had other things to worry about.
Yeah. I'm English. Great, we have hooliganism. Yeah. Before we get started, first and foremost, the important news this week is the passing of Carl Cochran the other day. Carl was I've got a little video that'll tell you a little bit about Carl. It went up on the members' channel first, and this is part of it for everyone.
All right, there's some very sad noise that on February the 19th, one-time Ace Frehley band bassist, also a guitarist and musician, Carl Cochran, passed away in a car accident. You know, Carl's father was a DJ with WRFM, so he had a large record collection that proved fertile to Carl's introduction to a wide variety of musical styles. Carl started studying jazz guitar and then performing when he was 15. And come 1994, he was suggested for the bass position in the Ace Frehley band by drummer Steve Budgie Warner. Carl had been playing with Joe Lynn Turner when Steve suggested that he audition for the band. He rejected the advances twice before agreeing to audition. He auditioned for the Ace Frehley band in early October 1994, and the band hit the road later that year with him as part of the lineup. As part of the live set, Carl was singing Strange Ways, and at the audition, he told Patrick DeBlasi, Brace's Rock Soldiers magazine, that during the performance of that song at the audition, he felt that there was a chemistry there, and that it was the vocals on that song that got him the gig. He continued to perform with Joe Lynn Turner and later his own band, Far Cry. Ace was thrilled with his addition to the lineup, proclaiming that the band kicked ass and was one of the hottest that he'd ever assembled. He felt that the chemistry and the energy expended during the sets was unbelievable. Carl was part of the lineup that recorded several demos at Baby Monster Studios in March 1995. Those songs included Take Me to the City, Sister, Don't Want to Lose You, and Too Far Gone. Following Ace's return to Kiss, Carl co-wrote several demos with Ace, but Into the Void made it onto the Psycho Circus album in 1998. He was also part of Eric Singer's ESP project, along with Bruce Kulick and John Corabi, and recorded the Lost in Space album with them. He sang 4-Day Creep, Still Alive and Well, Going Blind, Won't Get Fooled Again, and Snortin' Whiskey. Oh, and also Changes on that album, so you can still find that one available for sale. Do check it out. It's a great album. Following Ace's tenure with Kiss, Carl came back into the band for performances in 2001 at the New York Steel benefit and the following year at Eddie Trunk's birthday party bash, which was Ace's last live performance for a few years. Unfortunately, in 2014, Carl suffered a stroke and for many years continued to battle back from the effects of it. But there's much more to the man than that just brief Kiss-related summary. My condolences to his partner, family, and friends.
Yeah, so that's just a quick obituary type overview of Carl's contributions in the Kiss related area. Anyone got any memories on Carl Cochran that you want to share? Any add-ons to that before we move on?
Don't know him that well. I mean, I knew that he was in the band and I knew that those were his contributions. Didn't he also write something with the Kiss guys, didn't he?
Yeah, he wrote Into the Void.
Yeah, okay. I knew his name popped up on
it. Yeah, I met him a couple times over the years. He's a really nice guy. You know, I saw him post-stroke at one event where I was having a guitar signed for a charity.
event, and he was really keen to sign it and participate in that. Just a really nice guy, and obviously, the full clip I think is just dropped live for everyone to watch anyway, because it has a live version of "Strange Ways" from the tour with him singing it. So that's all that went up in the members' first part of the group now. So just a little bit about the members only section. I've decided to try and expand my motivation by doing a members only section of the KISS FAQ YouTube channel. First things that went up in that this week were a mini demo bite, which is a shorter song story for Torpedo Girl. I would never do one for the full length song stories that I do for some songs, which just there isn't a whole lot to talk about. So it was a good opportunity to dig into the writing of a shorter song. I think it's only 5-6 minutes with the musical feature. So it's just going to give me the opportunity to expand the stuff that I do and also take ads out of the regular channel. So it's got a purpose. So I want to thank everyone who's joined so far. Hopefully you enjoyed some of the material that's been shared this week. There is a video available that tells you how to join and the sorts of things that you can expect in the members only section. Kind of moving on from there is a new song story. Mark, new song story dropped. Come On Love Me. Dropped on the anniversary date of the song itself. So that's 2 from season 4 out there now. More to come.
Excellent.
All right, so we've got a new section that we do want to do, and I want to make a call out to anyone out there who has graphical and musical capabilities to do a 10-second intro to this section, which we're going to call Meet Us in the Mailroom. And obviously that riffs off Ladies' Room. If you can come up with an animated sequence to intro that section, and even if it's a paid gig to do so, send me a proposal of what it'll cost me and how you can do that and execute it so that it's worth my money, number one. But we'd love to do that. So anyone bought any KISS shit this week, Ken?
I didn't buy
any. How many gold singles have you ordered?
I didn't. Yeah, well, it's not getting that yet. But I didn't buy anything, but I pulled out a couple of old things of mine here. This is one of those scarf deals.
Yeah. Which store?
I don't know. This thing does not have it's like, I don't know if it was made in England or whatever, but there's another one that's better, which I like a lot better. And this might be related to the Australian tour. Let's get this one here. Yeah, this thing here. Be further away here. So this one is, I don't know if it's official. I think it is. I bought it around the time back then, early 80s, in a import record store. So I don't know if it has any identifying material, if it's just a ripoff of something, a copy of what they were put out. I'm just trying to see if there's anything. Yeah, I don't see any labeling otherwise. So I don't know, but I pulled it out. I thought they're kind of cool. Cool scarves, these things.
Yeah, very nice.
I might hang it up.
It's nice.
Actually, with the other one, maybe. Let's put them up there with that one.
Back Daniel, cool. What about you?
Actually, I got a hold of an old poster that I really loved back in the day. I always liked the way both Gene and Paul looked in the Creatures tour. When they, it was sort of a comeback after some so-so albums. And I don't know if you can see this one. It's
oh, yeah.
Point. It's a huge poster. And the other side, you have a great shot of Gene.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I just, it wasn't that expensive. I just got I had to get it. So a little poster there for you.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I got one thing. Well, I got 3 things in this week. One was a video, it turned into a video in the members only section, which was a 2015. I think it was New Zealand. I can't remember which one it was. Australia or New Zealand, the tour book. And I then did a little video on the differences between the two tour books. But in that pack was also a KISS Alive Worldwide tour itinerary that just happens to be the last one I needed to be able to scan and reference for the magic book. And I'd had, I think, all the other ones over the years. So I've got this. I've scanned it already. I'm going to throw this back up on eBay because I don't need it now. I've got the information because that's what I care about. So I was very happy when that popped up in an auction. It was a buy it now auction. So that was very cool. So let's just go through the list of Mark, I'll hit you last. All right. Of people who are watching us live, Austin Newland, AB, Rodrigo Alves, Jason Leonard, Hard Rock Heaven. Thank goodness he's here. That always helps. Titania Bell, Chiron, Keep It Greasy, Jeff Davidson, G Chup, Ronnie Parker, Paul BB14, Jeffrey DeVoe. And I think that's it for now. So, Mark, what do you have? Because you had a good week, didn't you?
Yes. Well, first of all, for to get rid of the confusion, this Marcus character that's in the chat, that is me. That's just my alternate YouTube channel that I'm using here. So that is me, in case you're wondering. And also, for you people who have been following me in my band situation, I've been waiting desperately for my album covers, and they have come in finally. So here's the vinyl covers.
That's going to trigger some hockey fans.
Yes. Well, I mean, this was done wrong before the hockey thing, obviously, but there's the front, there's the back cover of the album cover. And of course, I'm just waiting now for the posters and the download cards to come in. That won't take very much longer to do. And yeah, and then it'll be very close to completion. Oh, one other thing, too, and I don't have it here. I have them downstairs. The test pressings have come in. I've started listening to them. I've gone through 3 of the 10 so far, and they sound fantastic. So the test pressings are in as well, which means that we're even closer to completion. So there you go.
Very cool. So this week I've started moving polls out of the FAQ to bring them onto the YouTube channel so that everyone can participate in them. And this week, I obviously with the Torpedo Girl song story going up, I've asked the question, what was Ace's best song on Unmasked? And respondents on that rank Talk to Me as the very best of Kiss's of Ace's songs on the Unmasked album, with unfortunately the Torpedo Girl song that inspired the episode and the poll falling last. Ken, what's your favorite Ace song on Unmasked?
I don't know. It's kind of different. It depends on the how I feel at the time. I like Two Sides of the Coin. I like that one, so I'll go with that for now.
Daniel, how about you?
I don't like any of those songs, unfortunately. He blew his load on the solo album and Dynasty. But if I had to pick one, I'd say Talk to Me is such a boring title and boring lyrics in that one, so I have to go with, I think I'd go with Torpedo Girl. I think it's a pretty fun song, at least.
I like you, Daniel. That's what I would go for. Torpedo's like the too, most fun. It's funny. It's idiotic. Different. It's juvenile, but it's a nice follow-up to Rocket Ride. Come on. They're both in the same vein. Yeah. And like I mentioned in the song story, wouldn't it be great if Pop House was to take some of these songs and have animated videos like Mission to Mars?
That's a cool one.
And turn them into not just a lyric video, but something with a little bit more intent. And Torpedo Girl would be perfect for Ace cruising around a lagoon, Gene coming out of it like the monster from the Blue Lagoon or Black Lagoon, whatever that old horror flick was. Mark, your favorite.
Well, as you could see in my post there in the chat, Talk to Me is my favorite, of course. Always loved that song. I've always loved the fact that it's very Keith Richards-ish with the open tuning there that he does. The open tuning was quite prevalent on this record for Mr. Fraley. He used it for a lot of his songs on here. So it has a very Rolling Stones side to it. So that kind of connects a little bit with me. So I think that's definitely the winner in this situation, for me at least.
Talking about animated videos, it could be a pretty animated video to Rocket Ride if you want to do one for that song.
But you know it won't happen because it's a good idea. Because it's a good idea, they won't do it. That's, of course, the Kiss way.
Yeah, well, Baby Driver for Peter. Shock Me had so much potential.
Yeah. I was so bummed out. You remember a few years back when that movie came out, Baby Driver? It would have been the perfectly, the song for that movie, but they didn't pick it up.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We've got one other poll this week, and I will do some of these each week now for us to talk about at the top of the show. And obviously this ties into the first topic, which we do have a topic for today, as you can tell from the title, but whether we get to it, it's going to be a completely different matter because
we'll see what happens.
KISS announced the delayed, and it's delayed from last year, obviously, the Golden Strutterbox. I did a little mini episode talking about that. That was on the main channel for everyone to see, and thank you to everyone who checked that out. It's just 5 minutes of your time. A 5-inch solid gold, 8-ounce strutter single with a book. It's got some of the story of the song, Gene's memories of the song, photos, errors. But I asked the question, does the Golden Strutter Box product harm your opinion of the KISS brand, regardless who is behind the idea and its execution? That includes, obviously, the delay and all that. To me, again, as I said in that video, it got people talking about KISS who might not otherwise talk about KISS. We are KISS fans. We talk about KISS every week, no matter what. So does it tarnish my opinion of them? No. I've seen some of the shit that they've come up with and some of the shit that's never made it. And you can't fail unless you do something. And I'm starting to sound like Paul Stanley. So, Ken, what's your thoughts on the Strutter single and whether and its impact on the reputation of the band?
Well, the reputation, I don't know. But it's more about not the band to me. It's more about, I think, the new pop. I guess it's before. Did they must have come up with this before Pop House deal, right? So, because if it was already in the works, we have to blame it on KISS, I guess. I don't like it, but that's me. And sure, I could buy I could buy either one if I really wanted to. If I wanted to, if I wanted to mortgage my house, if I wanted to unload my 401k or whatever, sure. But I'm not crazy. So, it's crazy. Fine. If someone wants to buy this stuff, that's fine. If they can, I think it's cool to collect it. I guess the only cool thing about it to me is it actually can play. I mean, I'm surprised it could actually play on a turntable.
How much gold comes off with each spin of each revolution's costing about $50.
Every time you're the diamond is digging into the gold and little flakes are coming off. I don't. It's the same old thing. They come out with these things like a monster book, which was way overpriced too. It's just another one of those things where I go, no, I can't see myself ever, buying one something like this for that amount of money. It's just kind of wild. Now, they should have had maybe a third version and just had a smaller kind of box, printed on. We have a single and a gold. It could still be gold, but it doesn't have to be pure gold. And so people can, that cannot afford those other things, buy that.
That would go otherwise against all of Gene's ideas of this.
They sold that. They had the Shout It Out Loud single, right? The Shout It Out Loud single.
Yeah, and that's available for sale. Again for order. Yeah.
So why can they do that with Strutter too? Does it have to be the $50,000?
It's not a Rolls Royce, Ken.
Yeah. And then the other thing about choosing Strutter, I understand it's the first song, first album. I don't know. I'd rather have
People were suggesting also because of Hard Goods, and I am so against the concept Hard Goods was the first appearance of KISS on vinyl. There are things on Hard Goods that weren't recorded until February 1974. So don't give me that shit that was the first appearance of KISS on vinyl, unless you can actually prove it, because Alan Price was recorded January and February 1974. Steel Eye Span was recorded in January 1974. There was stuff that was released on, obviously it could have been in the can. There was stuff dating back to 72 and even older, and a couple of the archival things on Hard Goods. So I do not believe for a minute that Strutter on Hard Goods is the first appearance of KISS on vinyl. I think that was issued because it was being released as the third single. So that's the only thing that I've been able to come up with. Daniel, your take on, I know Mark's got a quarter in him. I'm just letting him fester and get really angry with this conversation before we unleash the topic on him. So your take on the golden single?
You guys covered it pretty much, but I think it's another one of these crazy ideas that KISS think is a good idea. Ken mentioned the Monster Book. I think this is the second coming of the Monster Book. You know, a useless but beautiful product that of no one have any usage of the product, but it looks cool. It's overpriced and it gets you headlines. So I think that's the major reason they did it. I don't even know if they have printed up those copies by now, but you get a few headlines, and I think that's the reason why they're doing this. And we have to put this in context. This has nothing to do with Pop House. This is a deal they did prior to connecting to Pop House. So Pop House isn't behind this crazy idea. This is something that Gene and Paul, you know, licensed out to some other guys. So Pop House has nothing to do with this product.
Well, that, Gene and Paul can't license the music out. You know, that has to come through Universal.
Yeah, actual music.
But this hasn't gone through Pop House. This is something they did.
You're very adamant about that. This has nothing to do with the Swedes.
Because Pop House is
defending Pop House. I see. So, yeah. Already.
Yeah.
And it's not another Monster Book, because Monster Book had a warehouse full of unsold pages that hadn't even been assembled into books. They weren't allowed to sell the individual printed photos that were printed to try and recoup anything. So, you know, it's a completely different scenario that they will make up to five of these and they don't ship till June. So it sounds like it's very much on. I wouldn't be surprised if only one of them sells, because you know there's going to be that one guy who
the
has
the same
to
guy
have
who had Ace and Gene at home while he, you know, Gene and Ace during the thing that you guys bought. What was the name of it?
Oh yeah, the Vault Experience.
Silly Safe stuff there.
Yeah, the silly. All right, silly Mark. Safe. You're like, I'm not talking about this until we do the show. So please, Mark.
Well, the fact that Daniel brought up the fact that Pop House has nothing to do with this is immediately the most alarming bit about this, because that means it came from the KISS end of things, which means that I'm starting to ask if these guys are really need to get their brains checked out professionally by doctors. Because first of all, the ad for this, okay, the advertisement where this guy comes out, sits down on his sofa with his guitar and starts playing along to the single. Now, yeah, that's what I would do. Let me take out my $50,000 single, put it on my record player, and sit down on a sofa and jam with it. That makes a lot. First of all, the guy that's sitting on the sofa is playing this shitty Ibanez guitar. If you can buy a $50,000 fucking single, KISS fans wouldn't. I think for the most part, if you could afford that single, you would probably buy yourself a Gibson Les Paul, like a real KISS fan, right? Who played Gibson guitars, right? So why do see this? This already shows the disconnect with their audience. KISS fans loved Les Pauls and those things because that's what Ace plays and that's what Paul played. And you know, why would you make an ad with a guy playing a guitar that has nothing to do with KISS whatsoever? That's another thing that kind of, you know, stroked me the wrong way. But first of all, the whole thing is just ridiculous. I mean, how many times have we as fans on these chat forums and Facebook and everywhere else said, we're looking for, you know, things to buy again, collectible things, you know, and stuff that's not out of reach. I mean, the box, it's, yeah, they can be a little pricey, but for the most part, it's still something that I think will still sell. Yeah, for some people, it's still a little out of range, but they're still at least somewhat affordable. If they think for 1 second this is even remotely affordable, I don't know what they're thinking. This is absolutely insane. Like, what were they doing when they thought of this? Like, were they sitting? I don't know. Like, it's almost like they're smoking weed or something. They were like all together and went completely bonkers with this. I don't understand the logic in this. I mean, and I know I've heard that. I've seen that video before where Gene goes and says, you know, well, people can't afford a Rolls Royce, but it's still there, you know, for people who can afford it. Well, okay, that's great, but you got to know your KISS demographic a bit here. I mean, sure, there might be some, you know, lawyers and doctors who maybe can afford it, but for the most part, KISS fans don't have that kind of coin laying around to just pay, buy a fucking single like that. And in gold like that, an actual gold, that's just completely stupid, in my opinion.
There's only five of the $50,000
one. It doesn't matter.
No, I'm just saying that. I'm just making a point. It's like they should have marketed it and, you know, something a lot less expensive, like I said, a single or whatever, where they can produce a lot and make a lot more money, I think, in the end.
But Ken, that's a good idea. That's why they won't do it, because they're idiots. I'm sorry. I'm getting to the point now where I'm starting to think that they're really lost the plot here, these guys. Like, why would they do? Oh yeah. Yeah, probably did. But I mean, this doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you can go through any kind of thing about, oh, it's making people talk and this and that. Who cares? You can make people talk with other things besides a $50,000 single. You know, that's completely pointless. You know, it's not. I just don't see how this is going to improve people's, you know, opinion of the band. And I'll tell you something else. You're talking about reputation. When this came out, I just started talking with a few people online, you know, friends and that, and some people from some of the other things that I'm involved with, but like the Yes community and this and that. KISS, you know, within some of these people, I'm sorry to say, but they're starting to look like a complete laughing stock. You know, people are actually wondering what kind of logic, you know, is behind some of these things here. I mean, you know, and being a KISS fan, I try to somewhat defend it to some degree, but I mean, it's hard to defend it anymore. I mean, people just now when you say KISS, people start laughing, saying, oh, those guys that put that $50,000 single out. Yeah, those guys. Yeah, it's becoming a joke with people now. I'm very concerned about that. I mean, are you going to be, it's going to be back in the days when it was so ridiculous to be a KISS fan. And then finally, when they did like Lick It Up, everybody started saying how KISS was cool again. Are we going to go back into the dark ages with this now? Are people going to look at KISS fans as complete idiots? Like, I mean, I don't get this at all.
Hey, Mark, here's an idea. So if they would have done a vinyl type kind of single, but made it nice and did a little small package or whatever, but have Strutter on one side, right? And then on the B side, have the demo version of Strutter. So you have both versions of Strutter, you know, that you can at least listen to. And I don't think that's ever been, you
know. Well, it's a good idea, Ken.
Something honestly, different.
It's a good idea. But why? But what? They won't do it because it's a good idea. You know, I mean, honestly, they need somebody else at the helm of this shit. Because if these ideas are the ones that are being passed, my God, I can only imagine what other things have been, you know, thought of and rejected. I mean, it's unbelievable here. I don't know. It really bothers me because I want to be one of those guys still who has some sort of, you know, respect for the band and to talk about them proudly and amongst other musicians. I mean, now I'm almost afraid to talk about KISS with other people because they see this shit come out and they start wondering, you know, if I'm starting to lose the plot because I think this is somewhat of a good thing, which I don't think it is at all, you know?
I can tell you that I'm 100% sure that a KISS fan did not come up with that idea.
Of course not.
There's no way a KISS fan would ask for that.
No, I think that cocaine's a hell of a drug. Yeah. You know, my biggest problem with it is that someone approved it.
Yeah, they did approve it, though.
So supposedly an adult with executive power approved it. And I think what this also kind of indicates is that KISS fans are ripe to be meme coined. You know, so you'll get a Gene Simmons crypto meme coin that you'll pay $1,000 for, and it'll immediately be worth $1 or 10 cents because all the money will be stripped out of that meme coin, as happens with so many, you know, custom cryptos that come and go. I mean, the Hawk Tour girl had crypto, and look what happened there. You know, so KISS fans would buy in simply because it's got a KISS logo on it and it's bright and shiny, and their crypto wallets would be empty the next day. And they'd be like, oh, look at me. You know, I bought it. But this is a product that $50,000, you immediately lose more than half your value because the spot of gold, as already pointed out in multiple places, for 8 ounces of gold is not even worth half. It's $24,000 at $3,000 an ounce. So you're immediately so far underwater if you ever did need to sell it that you don't even have the bullion price because of the markup. So again, I don't get it. I don't get the Nickelback guy who looked like Sinkin' Stanley. There you go, Sinkin'. I mentioned you for once. Wearing a wife beater, playing an Ibanez You know, that's so un-Kiss. I mean, is that stock footage? Like, I have no idea. It's just sloppy. And then there's the errors. Wicked Lester did not get together in 1972. Mm. That's the first line in the book, Liz. That's wrong. Strutter wasn't born in 1973. Strutter was performed at the Epic A&R Showcase in November 1972. I'm being a piss-ass pedantic twat right now because I can be. Because that stuff bothers me. That stuff shouldn't get through the process. And I ranted about that already in the other video. So I'm just, it's like an echo chamber. But
yeah,
you have to, yeah. And here's a great comment. They must be capitalists. So yes, they have the right to offer for sale anything that they want under the sun. That is what business is, supply and demand. You have the right to buy. You have the right not to buy, but goddammit, we have the right to mock and to discuss and to debate and also sometimes to get really excited and pontificate very positively about stuff. So, you know, there we go. What's the other news this week? Let's move on from that shit show, that golden shower of shame.
Hold the golden,
Multiple podcasters are dropping hints about things that are coming in March, and one of the first announcements that have been made simultaneously is an audio tour of New York City coming on the 22nd in celebration of the 50th anniversary of Dress to Kill. Now, there will be an audio tour that is available online and in person if you happen to be in the area, which does actually sound fun, even if it's an idea that other people have done and suggested. So that'll be fun to see. But people are immediately now connecting that with other announcements from podcasts, unofficial, because none of these are up on Kiss Online. So it's just farts in the wind for now that, you know, box sets are coming. So people are starting to put, oh, this is happening in March. What happened in March? Well, Destroyer was released in March. Oh, Dress to Kill was released in March. Then other podcasts are saying, well, I've just been scanning something for something.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of coming together. Dress to Kill is happening in March. I'm working on something for Dress to Kill. So Daniel, your thoughts on all of those announcements and hints and nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more.
Well, I think we all look forward to the box sets. That's the main thing happening this year. And
hey, Dana, can you turn your mic up a little bit? You're really low.
Am I really low now?
No, you're okay.
Am I okay, you're okay now? Okay. Well, the thing is, the box sets, that's the thing that we're looking forward to this year. And recalling the previous box sets that were fantastic, I especially enjoyed some of the things on the Creatures box sets that I didn't know exist, like that demo for Betrayed. Because I'm always into the music side of things, I don't really care for a golden record of a song that I've already heard. If they can find some stuff that haven't, you know, made the rounds yet, that's what I'm looking for. So I'm really excited for the Dress to Kill box set. I'm not too sure what they will do with Kiss Alive set, but I'm sure they will come up with some cool stuff for that as well. I do know that people who have been interviewed and have been at meetings with the Pop House guys here in Sweden, they seem really excited about these box sets. So I'm sure they won't be, you know, I'm sure the box sets will be the thing this year, and I'm looking forward to those. All this other crap with golden records and stuff, I don't care for that, but put out those box sets and let's see where we go from there.
Yeah, one of the things that people are trying to put together, you know, on the FAQ message board, anyone go and read those, by the way, is that there's a great deal of concern about what might be in a Dress to Kill box set.
Mm.
And it is a concern. My concerns around any box set starting up again are multifold. Number one, it's been a few years now, 3 years nearly, since the Creatures of the Night box set. So they are resetting expectations. This is a new baseline. Whatever happens this year, the first box set, if there is a box set, is going to be baselined and everything is going to be measured against it, and it is going to be measured against what was, I think, absolutely stunning box in Creatures of the Night. It wasn't flawless, obviously, but it was by far a very, very good piece of product. You are taking on an extraordinarily difficult studio album to deluxe treat if you're talking about Dress to Kill. We all know the stories about how it was recorded in 10 days and how they stretched the gaps between bands on the vinyl to make it longer. They did that with Destroyer as well. So naturally, fans are very concerned about the contents of it. So it's going to need to be curated very, very carefully in order to make sure that it does justice to existing as product. I think fan expectations are probably the biggest concern is probably price. Now that there are $50,000 gold singles, and how much was the Creatures vinyl issue? Now, obviously, that's a completely different case study, but 900? That was pretty steep in terms of its cost, yeah. And we don't know anything about formatting yet. Nothing's been announced. So right now, there is no box. There are only hints and suggestions and people kind of making shit up as they go. So, you know, those are some of my concerns anyway, is that you are resetting expectations. You cannot have another situation with a super deluxe box where you have a live recording like you did on Destroyer. That can never happen again. You cannot have the wrong material from the wrong album showing up on a Kiss box set, especially at the prices, the economic conditions. You know, most of these are made in, I think, Czech Republic, a lot of products pressed in Canada. So now tariffs come into play. And for many customers, that's going to add money to the cost of it. So there's a whole bunch of factors that come into play as Pop House, who hopefully work hand in hand with Universal, need to get behind and think about. So that's your free information for 10 cents. Ken, your thought on boxes and whatnot.
Yeah. First of all, we're the only podcast that doesn't have the information or we don't blab it out. But anyway, the Pop House with the Destroyer, Dress to Kill. I would hope that they would, keep the good things that they did in the other box sets. Like, you know, of course, you know, you had the book, you had the, some knickknacks stuff, you know. I'm not so big on the, you know, stickers and things like that, but that's fine. It's more about the unreleased kind of music, which I want to hear. And I don't know how much there is, but there may be some unreleased stuff or a lot of demos that they did during that, you know, making that record. Still think they should do probably another, was it Atmos type release as part of that, like they did with the other ones. The thing with the live part is tricky, because if they're going to do maybe the Kiss Alive box, you don't want to overlap too much there, because the live box or the live album was based on the Dress to Kill tour. So you can't really use I don't think you really can use a show from there, unless you use a totally separate show that was not part of the Kiss Alive, you know, recordings that were used. Because that has to be, you got to keep those separate for sure.
So any of the recordings weren't used. If it was
that's true too, I guess. And is there a possibility of getting a video? Is there a video for, you know, anything good out there for that time period?
You want them to get gooched?
Let's not get onto that one. But I'm just hoping it keeps up with what they've done, because the other box sets have been pretty good so far. I like the unreleased stuff. I like demos. I like other songs that did not make it that they did record. So, but I don't know how much they have. So I'm thinking they're going to have some live material for sure. And hopefully it's a good soundboard from that period.
I want to be as excited as Mark Cicchini. Mark.
Well, box sets are always a thing that are kind of a touchy situation with me, mainly because the fact that I buy a lot of box sets from other bands. And I don't know, I'm not going to say that they're better than the Kiss ones, because, like, for example, the Destroyer one, there's a lot of stuff within there that I thought was very cool, like, you know, those, the recreation of the press kits and stuff like that. Those are all things that I kind of enjoy, you know, getting and looking at, and I find them really cool, right? And those kind of things are great. And but mainly you want the music, right? And some of the things that I find in other box sets that happen sometimes don't happen in Kiss box sets. Like, for example, there's a great thing that like on a King Crimson box that I have, where they show an actual reconstruct, and it's even a Zappa one, the Hot Rats box, that they show like an actual creation in real time of them doing like a song, like, you know, Peaches and Regalia. They show how they started out just on piano, how this and that came about, and oh, they added this part, and all of a sudden they have the song. So it's like, I like those kind of things, and that's something that Kiss doesn't really ever provide in their box. That's at least not that I can recall, right? And it's, you know, the extras in there, like the sort of alternate versions, they do that as well, Kiss, right? But, you know, I'd like to see a little bit more of those things. It's just those little odds and ends that some of the other box sets that I've gotten, they seem sometimes sort of lacking in Kiss stuff, you know. But I'm looking, I'm hoping that this is going to be a great box set. I hope that, you know, that there's stuff available that will surprise people. Like, I could, for me, a good box set will be this. If Julian sees it and says, wow, I can't believe that this is in there because I didn't know about it, then you know it's going to be good, because Julian and these people are the ones that are the ones that are neck deep in the kind of stuff that's, you know, not available, that's in, hidden in the shadows, you know, the collector circle stuff, you know. Yeah, of course. Come on, Julian, you know a lot of stuff that's in the collector's circles.
I know, right? Nothing.
You know nothing. We'll say that. But if he did, you know, then if he's surprised, then I would think that it's going to be a good box set, you know, because it's still possible to make a good box set, and one that'll surprise even the most hardcore of Kiss fans, I believe, right? But whether they have enough of a drive to search in the deep crevices of the vaults to find these things, I don't know, because some bands take care of their stuff better than others, you know. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and it's not nearly all about whether they can get access to, you know, fan stuff, you know. There are cases where a fan may want too much money for what they think they have. So it comes down to being an economic, you know, decision. It's a line. You have to remember that it's the music business. So everything to do with these things is a line item on a spreadsheet with a cost benefit, profit and loss, etc. You know, how much is it costing us to put this together? What do we have? What might we need? What can we get free? You know, over the years, I gave stuff for the Destroyer box, no charge, because, again, I'm a collector. I just happen to get it. It's not mine. I don't own the rights to it. I can't do anything with it. And I hope that they would clean it up if they used it. I've said it before that I sent it in for reference uses in hopes that they would match it up with what they had in the vault and it would be pristine. No, they happened to use it, so it didn't turn out the way that I hoped. So who knows? And again, I think there's a very good comment. Where was it? You know, Kiss fans like to complain. Kiss fans like to discuss, and our discussions become heated. I don't think anyone is really complaining yet. And I don't think you have to wait until you have it in your hands to discuss it or debate it. We're all just chiming in with ideas about what might be, going from the hints out of being, we're not the ones throwing chum in the water. It's other folk are throwing chum in the water, and some of it is being so misinterpreted that they are setting fans up for a downer, to be let down. And that's one of my concerns. I say it all the time.
I'll just say real quick, before Daniel chimes in, there is that rumor too that, you know, they did record what is it? Oh, maybe that's too late. Never mind. I'm not even going to say that.
Yeah.
So, I'll disregard a remark that I'm just, my timing's off.
That's right. Maybe you never just mind. Wanted to say, Julian, shut up. Your monologuing again.
No, not at all.
Rob Benjamin. when you have passionate and dedicated fans, you can get away with a lot. And that's what I don't think anyone wants. No one wants to be left feeling ripped off, let down, disappointed, or not meeting expectations. Daniel?
I don't know what the hell we're talking about. What's the question? You monologued for too long. I zoned out. What are we talking about?
The box sets, those, you know, upcoming stuff.
The walking tour, celebrating Dress to Kill 50th. We're going to do a 50th refocus next month. I'm shut up, Daniel.
That's right. We will do.
It's pretty clear that Julian has a lot on his mind this week, but that's okay. Let him speak. however, I have to say we're all excited about the box sets. I've heard that people have been in meetings with Pop House, and the fans, they actually invite a lot of Swedish fans to meetings, and they discuss this and that. And when they come out from those meetings, they seem pretty excited. So I think there's a few things cooking, and I think we'll get some really cool box sets or whatever this year, because they're really trying to get the fans into the planning of these things. And you need that in order to make it interesting for us in the KISS Army. So I'm really looking forward to these box sets. And if you think they are expensive, you can still get the music other ways. There's something for everyone, so you don't need to spend as a lot of money like that shitty gold thing that they released, which I previously told you has nothing to do with the Swedish company.
You really love this company. Are you working for them now, Daniel? I'm starting to get the feeling like you're maybe like an underling worker for this company now.
Oh, I'm busted.
he should just have a Swedish flag behind him as his background, because he's just waving the flag for
I just people. Have to hand it to Mark and congratulate you on beating the Americans in the Four Nations tournament.
Wow.
Connor McJesus doing the decisive goal in overtime. It was such a great game, so I really enjoyed it.
Was there any doubt, really, that Canada would win? I mean, it is our game.
Yeah, they were beaten by America in the previous round, so it was a close call.
Once Canada,
Connor McJesus came through.
Once Canada becomes the 51st state, it will be considered a win for USA.
That'll never
happen. That would be a hockey team.
Well, you know what, Mark? Just remember, the U.S. has won more Super Bowls than you guys ever will.
Well,
there you
I'm
go.
Not a football person.
What is what? No one knows what a Super Bowl is outside of America, so it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, just like baseball, the world champions.
The world champions in America.
Yeah, so what's come up on the chat as I've been monologuing and you guys have been getting a word in edgewise is the Richard Marx interview with Paul Stanley. Did anyone check that out? I haven't had a chance yet. So
I saw a little bit of it.
No.
Ken, of the little bit nothing that you really, saw of it, what did nothing, you think?
Nothing. No. I didn't get a lot of I think Paul is you know, done with KISS. I get that. It sounds like it. There's nothing about them getting back together and doing anything. It's more, he teases that he may do something, I think, himself, you know, but I don't know. Honestly, I don't know if he could do the singing part of it. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to see much from Paul. I doubt it, but if he does, you know, it's good for him if he can do it. But I don't think he's going to be out there like Gene is at all. You know, nothing like that.
You know what the problem, though, I think is with this, that Richard Marx, I believe he's friends. He's obviously
friend
with Paul. Yeah. And I think that with him, he feels safe with him. It's going to be all softball questions. He's not going to ask anything that's really, you know, some kind of digging deep question, because you know Paul is very touchy about these kind of things, and he'll never answer anything that the people really want to hear. So he'll love doing these Richard Marx interviews, because he can talk about cooking and God knows what else, instead of talking about music, what they what the people actually want to hear from him. Yeah.
I mean, he asked a question like, when did you put on the makeup for the first time? That kind of question, you know. So yeah. It's like that's like a fan, you know.
A
fan
would a new ask, question. You
know? But yeah. It's just.
I think the problem with like Paul that. Is that he is done. Put a fork in him. He has nothing yet. He has nothing left to say.
I think they do. It's just a matter of being willing to put themselves.
Not about Kiss. Not about Kiss. He seems so uninterested in Kiss since they ended the in Madison Square Garden.
Well, doesn't he have an art show this weekend? I thought he was doing.
He's doing the art thing. Yeah, he's still doing that.
Yeah. Hooray!
Hey. You know what? The guy's in his 70s. He's had a lifetime of rock and roll and preaching. So yeah.
You need to have the right expectations. We're watching an interview trying to get some new information. We won't get there from Paul.
And you're watching Richard Marx's podcast. What do you expect?
But I just have to. Yeah, but you can't expect anything new from Paul when it comes to Kiss. He's done with Kiss, I think.
Not in that venue. You know, I think if he put himself out there, he can handle what we might call a more pointed question. Paul's a smart guy. Paul will stop and think about it and then answer. Yeah, and no you'll be able to tell if he's uncomfortable with the direction because he's very open in his feelings and transmitting them.
I'll just say one thing quickly so before we move on. But I don't think age should be a factor in this. There are people, musicians older than Paul, that are still doing stuff and still making music and playing. So I don't think that should be an issue. It's just whether, I think what Daniel said, whether his interest is still in there as much as it was in the past. That's all.
Yep, I saw a video of Buddy Guy the other day standing at a bar with a glass of cognac, playing some Cream in one hand and toasting fans with the other, 88 years old. So, yeah, age is just a number. There you go. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to today's topic now that we've got 5 minutes left.
8 minutes.
I knew as the things started mounting this week that it was going to be a show that better would have been described as topics from the board. But there you go. We've got so good, so bad, so what. And the topic was framed around the discussion of 10 songs that make you cry. Well, what do you mean make me cry? Make me cry in a good way? I'm crying with excitement, or I'm crying from being hurt, or I'm crying from being depressed, you know, so... What are some of the songs that make us cry? Mark, why don't you throw out one of yours and tell us how it makes you cry?
Well, I'll do one. How about I do one good and one bad example?
Do it.
So one of the examples of a song that makes me cry with joy about how great the song is Black Diamond. It's always been one of these songs where when I've heard it, I've always thought that this is an example of a song that has everything in it. Great music, the guitar playing is amazing, some great lyrics in there, you know, not the typical kind of stuff. You know, it's a little bit more thought out, I think, than normal. Paul, I think of Peter Criss singing on there as well, which is fantastic, I think. Absolutely a barn burner. And not only do I like it on album, sure, it has that long droning ending at the end, but you can always just lift the needle when it gets to that point. But the live versions are just so fantastic of this song. Never have I heard a bad version of Black Diamond live. It's such a great song. Translates good from studio to live. So that one makes me cry in such a fantastic way. But a song that makes me cry tears of bitter sadness is when I hear a song like She's So European. Like, what was the thought process behind this? Such a terrible song. Brutal keyboards in there. Lyrics that he should be ashamed about and slapped upside the head for. And just totally terrible song. You know, and the fact that Gene actually pushed to have that played live on German television deserves to be even more ridiculed because it's such a shit song that I can't believe that, you know, they would play that. I mean, to put it on album, maybe they had to because Gene didn't have anything else better, which is also alarming to think about. But, you know, the fact that they played that on a TV performance is like, wow, that's just unbelievable. Like, she's so European, It's just not a good song. She's So Garbage is what it should have been called.
Wow. But how do you really feel? And Ken, would you like to respond to the shots Mark's just taken at your guy?
Yeah, that's not. I mean, I like that song. I like She's So Garbage. Yeah, it's not his best song, but it's not one of his worst songs. Like you could have picked some other songs, Mark, from Gene.
Well, there are others.
Maybe agreed. Yeah, he just wanted to take a dig at Gene, I think, on that one. So anyway, I'll just say I agree with you because one of them on my list was Black Diamond Live, especially from maybe around 76, you know, that era. You know, 77. It was so good. It's so good live. So that makes me, you know, cry, you know, tears of joy kind of thing. So I love that one. So I agree with that. I'll pick you another two real quick. So one would be Calling Dr. Love, because that song is kind of what is my first favorite song. And I love the song. I love the, you know, the melody, everything about it. The riff is great. Singing's great. The fantastic guitar solo is what really sends it over the top for me. So that's that one. And then one that really bugs the hell out of me, that cry that it's just so, it's not good, is Hold Me, Touch Me from Paul's. It's like I still don't get it, and it kind of goes hand in hand with, and maybe I'll just say it real quick, with Odyssey. I'm just gonna put those two together, Hold Me, Touch Me and Odyssey, because these are two songs where Hold Me, Touch Me, fine, it's a pretty, you know, it's a well written song, and but the way he sings it is not his normal kind of singing that he normally, you know, does. It's all lispy kind of singing. It's just kind of strange. So that one was bad for me, and then the other one was Odyssey. Again, same singing in a like a trying to be the opposite. You know how he did Fanfare. I actually like that, but in the like a young boy's voice, he went over the top to me. I'm the man voice. I'm going to sing an Odyssey, you know, and that type of voice. He's just sang in his normal Paul Stanley type voice for Odyssey, and that would have been a lot better. So
I've been quiet for
those bother. Those Daniel. Bother me.
Daniel? Ooh,
Daniel.
Daniel?
Daniel, got anything?
We have a delay with
him. I seem to have some problems with the connection. This is my turn now.
Yes.
It's my turn. Something that makes me cry. Actually, every time I put on Asylum and I listen to that mini Eric Carr drum solo in the beginning and the Paul Stanley vocals, it puts a tear in my eye because it's so great. And it makes me, you know, it's like I'm time traveling back to when I discovered Kiss. So that's one of the most you know, powerful beginnings of any Kiss song. So I have to put that one in there. And if I would pick one that makes me cry for different reasons, I could pick a few songs from The Elder, but I think I have to go with Bang Bang You on Crazy Nights, because I remember listening to Animal Eyes and Asylum and thinking they were kind of great records, and then buying Crazy Nights on the day it was released, getting back. I remember this. I brought a friend back home and we put it on the turntable and listened to it. And some of the songs, you know, the first time you listen to them, it's hard to get into them. But I could understand that Crazy Nights was a pretty good song. But when I got to Bang Bang You, I wasn't more than, you know, 11 or something, but I instantly felt that, what the hell is this? And to this day, it's the same feeling. What the hell is this? And I can add that they should have put Sword and Stone on that record, because that was a demo for Crazy Nights, And that song almost brings a tear to the eye because of the vocals from Paul Stanley. It's been done by other bands like Bonfire and pretty recently by a Swedish band called Crazy Licks. But they can never do it justice. They can never sing it like the god that is Paul Stanley of the 70s and 80s. So hearing that demo still brings a tear of joy to my eye. And those are some of the songs that make me cry a little bit.
Great picks, Daniel. I've got one that you'll think I'm channeling Lonnie today. One that makes me cry is Every Time I Look at You on MTV Unplugged. There are about 25 rehearsal takes of that. They did it three times that night when they did the show. And for me, that is just illustrative of Paul Stanley, the might and majesty of his vocal and the perfect delivery under the perfect circumstances of that song. You remember him on the rehearsal saying, "We're doing it again. Why? Because I like the song." Yeah, but they'd also rehearsed the living shit out of it to make sure it was perfect. They had done so many takes of that during the several days of rehearsal that led into MTV Unplugged that they must have been so, the other guys in the band must have been so sick of hearing Paul's song by that point. And then they rehearsed it with the orchestra, and then they absolutely slayed it. And that just brings a tear because of his emotion with that, and obviously his love and passion for that song and how it hadn't worked out when it was released as a single from Revenge. Mm-hmm. So that's one that brings a tear to my eye, and it's a happy one as well. Whenever I hear that song or pretty much anything from that album, what's one that makes me cry in a negative sense? Bang Bang You actually did make me cry back in the day when I slapped that cassette in and listened to Crazy Nights the first time. It was, what the fuck is this? But nothing can keep me from puking on you makes me cry.
Yeah.
It makes me very upset. It makes me have a toddler tantrum on the floor whenever I hear that song, which fortunately doesn't occur too often, especially when you consider the number of outtakes that they had from the Psycho Circus sessions. I Am Yours would have been great in that movie soundtrack for the sentiment that they were presenting. And they went with a Diane Warren facsimile of I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. And it just makes me cry that they blew an opportunity. Well, Armageddon and Detroit Rock City are not exactly the same sorts of vehicles. You would kind of want Detroit Rock City, the movie, to get hit by the asteroid. there's no cheering for anyone in that movie. But it's such a situation that they so missed an opportunity with that soundtrack. And that is what we get to remember 1999 and Kiss for. Am I clear?
Yes.
Yes. You're clear.
Very clear.
You made that clear. I agree, though.
So there we are. The news. And what a great show it is that the news, that Kiss news and things going on in the Kiss world, with the exception of Carl Cochran's passing, can take over the show topic just with an abundance of things that have happened after over a year of very little occurring in Kiss world. All of a sudden, there's an abundance. And I think that's something good to get excited about for 2025. As Daniel said, you know, things are happening, and he's hearing little chirps from the Swedish birds about things. And we're hearing little bits and pieces here. It's going to be a great year one way or the other, good or bad, whether you like things or whether you don't like things. There's going to be a lot to talk about in 2025, not only because it's the 50th anniversary of a whole shit ton of stuff, but clearly things, the wheels on the machine are turning again. So I think that's probably us for the week, unless anyone's got anything to add.
No, but I have to agree with you. That's perfect way to end it.
All right. There's been a whole bunch of people who've joined us today. I want to thank everyone who's joined us live and chimed in with your comments during the show. As always, you help make the show what it is with your comments live. And we do appreciate you taking the time to join us on a Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon or Sunday, wherever you are, whatever time zone you are. I want to thank everyone who joined the KISS FAQ members channel this week. There's a lot of stuff queued up to come over the next week, and I'm going to find a routine of what works and what doesn't for that channel. I got to find a way to get these guys in there. I haven't figured that part out yet. And remember, if you've got an idea or a concept that you are able to execute for meet us in the mailroom for our segment, which we do want to do every week, then do reach out, kissfaq@outlook.com. Hopefully you've got a great idea, because I actually recorded a vocal overdub to the backing track of Ladies Room, and it was freaking awful. So I deleted it and then purged my recycle bin. It was so bad. So there we go. Thanks for joining us. So from Daniel, Mark, Ken, and myself, we shall see you next time.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.